Greetings and welcome back to In With The Old. We are a video podcast devoted to dispelling myths, building appreciation for God's Word, and rediscovering the Old Testament for the life of faith. My name is Tim Howe, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Brian Koning. Dr. Brian, we're going through Ruth today, Ruth chapter 3. How are you doing today, and how are you feeling about this podcast?
Well, I'm doing well, Tim. I'm enjoying the series so far, and I'm looking forward to today's episode. It's going to be a little spicy, shall we say. We've got some interesting things to cover as we continue to see the blessings of God unfold in the life of Ruth. We get to look a little bit more at Boaz's character. But it's been a great series so far, and I'm ready to keep it going.
Yes, excellent. Well, let's dive in. So, listeners, today we're going to be looking at Ruth chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. And we're going to be reading from the text as we have been going through the book of Ruth, starting in chapter 3, verse 1. And I'm going to be reading from the CSB. Here we go. Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, shouldn't I find rest for you so that you'll be taken care of? Now, isn't Boaz our relative? Haven't you been working with his female servants? This evening, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfumed oil, and wear your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor, but don't let the man know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, notice the place where he's lying. Go in and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will explain to you what you should do." So Ruth said to her, "I will do everything you say." She went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had charged her to do. And after Boaz ate, drank, and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the end of the pile of barley, and she came secretly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Well, Brian, this is a passage that requires a lot of explanation, does it not? Naomi has a plan to go and harvest Boaz, as it were. And as we think about Naomi's plan, she rolls the dice. This is risky. This is risque. This is something that would have raised eyebrows and got everyone's hearts pounding. What on earth is going on here, Brian? What are some things that you see as we look at Ruth chapter 3, verse 1 and following?
Yeah, so as we make the turn into chapter 3, we not only see some narrative lines coming to a head, we see now some elevation, shall we say, in terms of the stakes and the euphemisms at play. Hmm. There's a lot to unpack here, Tim. Let's start at the beginning and kind of work our way into what's going on. So Naomi is going to hearken back here to her desire and her blessing and her hope for her daughters-in-law in chapter 1, verse 9, where she says, "Shouldn't I find rest for you?" Right? And the idea of rest, especially in the Old Testament, is incredibly important. That's what the promised land gives to the people of Israel, right? A place of rest. The book of Hebrews develops that idea for us. It's a place where you can be at where you're supposed to be, right? Your God, and in your place. And so that's what Naomi has always wanted for her daughters-in-law. And I like how you said it, Tim. This is risky and risque. Naomi's going to roll the dice because she sees an opportunity here. She sees Boaz and goes, "He's our relative." And this is going to bring in something that's very Old Testament and very uncommon to our culture, right, Tim? And the idea of a kinsman redeemer. So let's start here. What is a kinsman redeemer? Tim, can you help us kind of unpack that idea a little bit?
Yeah, a kinsman redeemer is a relative, a close relative, who is tasked with the responsibility to continue the family line, to continue the honor of the family by redeeming that which was lost. And redemption here means redemption of property. It means redemption of family members. It essentially means that the kinsman redeemer comes and takes over the responsibility of the person who has been lost. So in this particular case, that means that he would have to take on the welfare of both Ruth and Naomi, as well as the care of Elimelech's field. And so it's a heavy obligation, especially in a society where it was kind of hard to make ends meet at times. This was a social obligation that for some was very heavy, at which point some people didn't want to be a kinsman redeemer. But the word here is goel, right? He is a kinsman redeemer. Right. He's someone who can come and redeem essentially the fortunes of Ruth and Naomi. And so Naomi recognizes that Boaz is a potential kinsman redeemer. And so she says, maybe, just maybe, this is God's hand at work. So she recognizes this. She explains it to Ruth. What else do you see here, Brian, in terms of the significance of a kinsman redeemer?
Well, the important thing, especially for Israel, is you don't want to lose any names. You don't want to lose any families, right? This idea that every family has a part and portion in Israel. And especially when a male head of a family has died off, there's a question of what's going to happen to his line and his lineage, his family. Does it end here? And so the Goel is supposed to be this kind of stand-in to allow that line to continue on and forward. But as Tim rightly pointed out, listeners, that's an onerous responsibility and not one that everyone wants to take up. In fact, we see a couple instances in the Old Testament where people intentionally try to shirk this duty, or if they end up marrying a widow, try to not give her children for a variety of reasons. But it is a potential way for Naomi and Ruth, along with her, to come back into society, to no longer be living on the edges, as we've talked about, being on the kind of exploitable edge of society, but being brought in with more security. If Boaz were to marry, and we'll talk about who he's would potentially be marrying, but if he were to marry one of them, that would solidify their place in society. They are now permanent members of Bethlehem, no longer these kind of outcasts on the edge. Now, the key thing, Tim, as I just alluded to, traditionally, of the two women, who is he, if he is going to be the kinsman redeemer, his obligation is primarily towards Naomi, not Ruth, right? But that does raise a problem. As I said, one part of the kinsman redeemer idea is that children would be produced so that the line of whomever has died will continue on. Well, we've already been told in the story by Naomi herself, she is too old to have children. Or even if a miracle took place, right? There's an age issue here. She is near the end of her childbearing days or past her childbearing days. We're going to see in the story, Naomi is going to give tacit permission to Ruth through this kind of endeavor, shall we say, that Ruth should take over this responsibility or request from Boaz. Boaz should marry her, for she can still bear children and allow her husband's line to continue on. And then by extension, Elimelech's line would also be continuing on. So we have this plot that Naomi hashes. Boaz is this kinsman redeemer. You've already met him, Ruth. Here is what I want you to do. And she's going to lay out a few things, Tim. I'll walk through it, and then we'll talk about what's going on here. And is this a euphemism? Is this not? She says, this evening, he's going to be winnowing the harvest. And this is the harvest that Ruth just took part in the day before. He's going to be winnowing the barley on the threshing floor. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to wash, put on oil, wear your best clothes, and then go down there. Wait for him to have finished his evening meal. Wait for him to be in a merry mood. We'll talk about what being in good spirits means. And then when he lays down, I want you to go to him and do a few things, which we'll talk about in a moment. All right, Tim, what is the winnowing floor? What image or what is, because we're not an agrarian society. I don't live on a farm. You don't live on a farm. What is this winnowing floor? Maybe this will help us get the location locked into our minds and then talk about what's going on.
Yeah. So the winnowing floor is a place where the harvest can essentially be separated. So they harvest the grain. They need to separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were. So they basically rub it together in their hands. They throw it up in the air. And then that way the chaff, or the useless part of the plant, blows away in the wind while the rest of it remains for them to be able to use and harvest. So the winnowing floor or the threshing floor is, first of all, a place where they can store the harvest, but also what's so interesting about it is the threshing floor kind of has a notorious undertone to it. You know,
right.
This might be a little bit of a stretch in terms of like cultural parallels, but used to people talked about under the bleachers or things like that, right? Where in our own context, there are certain places where there's connotations of things that happen. So the threshing floor, and by the way, is mentioned in this context in the book of Hosea, right? Hosea chapter 9, verse 1, it talks about prostitution on the threshing floor. So on the one hand, it's a place where the harvest can be gathered. On the other hand, when it comes to the, you know, tryst of a man and a woman, this place might have some undertones that at least make us think, well, what is going on here? So that's the threshing floor. It's located outside of the village. It's normally on a hill. It's away from prying eyes. It's a place where the wind can come and blow through so that they are able to separate the chaff from the wheat. And it's also a place associated with prostitution. So lots of things going on in just the name of the location and telling us where this is about to go down. But that's some basics about the threshing floor.
Yeah, and the key thing is that it's usually outside of the town proper, yes, which is why it kind of develops a bit of, as you said, Tim, a reputation. It's away from prying eyes. Now, this does lead to not just illicit activity, but also thefts. Boaz is going to sleep there. And by the way, that's not necessarily any impugning on of his honor. It's away from the protection of the city. And so if you left your grain out there unattended, it could be stolen. So there's evidence that was not uncommon for farmers during this threshing season to sleep out there to protect their goods. We know from the book of Judges, in fact, Gideon has to thresh in his wine press because his threshing floor is not safe. It keeps getting targeted for raids. So listeners, I want you to picture, right, this location. It's outside of town. It is most likely on a hill to catch the wind. And so it sets not necessarily that there's going to be something a little bit more risque happening, but it's not outside of, especially in that Hosea reference, it's not outside the realm of possibility. And it's definitely an undercurrent kind of introduced into the story. So, Tim, Ruth is told to prepare herself. And this is kind of an interesting thing, isn't it? That she's told to bathe, perfume herself, and put on her best clothes. That sounds like a wedding preparation. Is it, or is that just us reading into the text?
Yeah, I don't think it is reading into the text. As we think about this, I think we have to understand it in its totality, right? You have bathing, you have anointing, you have new clothes. And let's maybe go from last to first. The new clothes very likely symbolized that Ruth was past her mourning period, right? It's very likely that she had mourning clothes on, even potentially as a worker in the harvest, as a sign that she was a widow. And so putting Correct. On your best clothes might be an indication, hey, I'm going from black to something else, to show Boaz that she was making herself available. Now, washing and anointing, again, this might have been hygienic. You know, it might have been make yourself look as good as you possibly can, right? This is an important event. But also, it's more than that. It's suggestive that I am not only putting on my clothes, but I am presenting myself to you as a potential bride. And so, for me, I think that's exactly what she's doing. And I think that's what she's doing because that's what she says she's doing whenever she goes to him. Cover me under the shadow of your wings. Look at me. And Boaz, he didn't have to do a double take. He immediately, even in the middle of the night, understood what was being proposed. And Brian, if I can just press a little point and then I'll kick it back to you. When we think of the obligation of the Goel or the kinsman redeemer, there were huge reasons why both Naomi and Ruth would have been undesirable in terms of ones to redeem. Right, Naomi for the reason that you mentioned, because she was past childbearing years, but also Ruth. Ruth was not past childbearing years, but she was a Moabite, and so both of these women would have been. Would have had social deficits. They would have been seen as undesirable. And that's part of the reason why, even as we think about the setting, this took place at night. And I think there's a really interesting honor game going on here, where Naomi is trying to hatch a plan that gives Boaz the opportunity to act nobly to redeem them, but also potentially saves both of them from the shameful response to say, if Boaz rejected them, that would have no doubt shamed Ruth and Naomi even further. It would have put Boaz in a difficult position where publicly he would have had to have made a response. So I think Naomi is very calculating here when she says, all right, Ruth, I want you to go. I want you to make a proposal. I want it to be clear that it's you and not me. And she's hoping against hope that the kindness that Boaz showed to Ruth as a worker in his field might extend even to the point of marriage proposal. But there's a reason she wanted Ruth to go to the threshing floor. There's a reason she wanted her to wear these clothes. There's a reason she wanted her to go to Boaz. There's a reason she wanted her to go at night. Every single part of this is intentional, and it tells us something about Naomi. It tells us something about Ruth, and it tells us something about Boaz. So, Brian, what do you see in terms of the clothing, the preparation, and then as we get to that famous phrase, what it means to uncover his feet?
Yeah, Tim, I agree with you on the one hand. This entire story, we'll come back to this, is being couched in such a way that this is a bold plan, a plan potentially to get all of the hopes and dreams of Naomi and Ruth satisfied, but it's giving an out to Boaz in a way that can save face, which is going to be important. This is an honor and shame society. There's a way for this to go badly if Boaz rejects Ruth and yet not ostracize Naomi and Ruth from society, right? It was a private, not a public rejection. And so I do think that's quite important that you point that out. I agree with you that the bathing and putting on new clothes is important and is indicative of Ruth entering a new season. We have in several passages in the Old Testament, right? Widows wear specific garments. Those have been put away. Full immersion bathing is not a common practice. It was typically done when a significant event was coming up, including potentially marriage. And so you do have these elements all coming together and coming to a head as to what Naomi is going to ask Ruth to do. Now we'll get to the key point, Tim, right? She tells Naomi, tells Ruth to go in and uncover his feet, lay down by them, and await to see what he will say. So we need to make a few key points, or at least I want to make one key point before we dive into this. The ancient Israelites were a society of farmers. They were around animals, and we, by and large, as Americans, aren't around animals growing up, right? The facts of life and the birds and the bees are things we learn in school, not learned from, hey, I'm walking around these animals, copulating and doing these things day after day. I think that needs to be factored in. We are in a highly sexualized society, aren't we, Tim? At least I would say that. Like the amount of sexual content just pervasive and available day to day is an incredibly high amount. And yet, I think we are far less mature and comfortable in talking about it. I mean, we even joked before we started recording, listeners are like, oh, good, this is the sex episode. I'm looking forward to this one. Right, because we don't like talking about it in public. They are much more matter of fact in the Old Testament because it's just a part of life. And so there's this kind of oddity of we tend to think of them as maybe a repressed culture. Well, they aren't as sexualized as we are, but they are much more willing to just talk about it as a fact of life. And what we do have here, listeners, is we have a whole lot of euphemistic ideas, and then we have to piece together, is this intentional or not? So I'll kind of walk through some of the key things. Tim, jump in if I miss something, and then I'll kind of ask you for your interpretation of what's going on here. I'll give you mine, and we'll go from there. So the word to uncover, galah, uncover his feet, right? That is often used with reference to sexual contact. In fact, it's part of an idiom, although it's normally uncover his nakedness or her nakedness, galah arwa. Here we just have galah to uncover, but it is part of an idiom not uncommon in the Old Testament for sex. Likewise, feet. Here's an odd thing. Idioms don't translate between cultures, do they, Tim? We have idioms in our culture, but in Hebrew, foot is an idiom for the pubic region. And everything below the waist. You can see this, for example, it refers to male sexual organs, Exodus 4, Judges 3, 1 Samuel 24, potentially Isaiah 7. there's some interesting stuff there. But realize it doesn't necessarily always mean that. It can literally just mean feet or legs. Daniel 10 takes it that way. There is something odd in Ruth's usage of the term foot. And Tim, I don't know if you saw this. The writer of this book does not use the regular word for foot, but uses it with the mame attached to it, his feet, or the place of his feet. Mm-hmm. Attaching the mem in Hebrew almost always makes the idea more abstract, and to my mind, means it's more euphemistic. We aren't talking about literal feet. We are talking about uncovering his nakedness, his member, shall we say. And then lastly, to lie down, shakav, that is often used euphemistically for sex. Rachel in Genesis 30 uses it, and Jacob lay with her. David and Bathsheba as a more near reference, 2 Samuel 11, he lay with her. So we have multiple idiomatic expressions put all together. But what the heck does that mean Naomi is asking Ruth to do? Tim, I'm going to kick it over to you first because I had to walk through that section. So you can give us the interpretation first. What do you make of all these things? Is this just us and our over-sexualized culture reading too much into it? Or do we need to be like, no, let's be mature about this. Is there something here and that's important to notice?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that we need to see is if the clothing, the anointing, the washing is suggestive of marriage, I think what Ruth is doing in Naomi through Ruth is making it plain. I want you to come and redeem the family line, which means, of course, that when we talk about sex, that's a necessary part of what it means to redeem the family line. In other words, I tend to look at this not as a seductive kind of encounter of Ruth to Boaz in that moment, but making very plain what it is that Naomi desires Boaz to do. I want you to marry Ruth. I want you to continue the family line. Here is this bride who is eligible and she is ready and waiting. So I don't tend to read this as Ruth seducing him in the moment or somehow suggesting that she is making a sexual advance on him at that moment. But I do think that there's too many coincidences as we look at this text to uncover, to lay the feet, all of those things. Now, I will say that when it comes to the ambiguity of the text, usually the verb lay is combined with an accusative, right? You are to lay with someone. There's no accusative, mm-hmm. right? We have the mame that's attached to the legs. It makes it a little bit more ambiguous. Maybe it's more euphemistic. We don't really know, you know, it was obvious that she was uncovering the lower part of his body. But just to put it frankly, the question is, how much did she uncover? It was enough for him to wake up because he was feeling the breeze, right? But we don't know exactly what was feeling the breeze. And of course, she's lying down. He wakes up and he sees this woman for the first time. She names herself as Ruth, and she is obviously very eligible. And so on the one hand, I think it's obviously suggestive. Marriage goes with sex. Sex goes with marriage. And sex is necessary for the redemption of the family line. Now, this is where it was so risky because Naomi was putting all of her hope in the fact that Boaz would respond honorably rather than taking advantage of Ruth. She's hoping against hope that he will redeem her. And Ruth, similarly, given her forebears, right? The daughters of Lot seducing their father in the midst of a drunken stupor, right? Ruth could have easily tried to push the limits of this and take it too far. But as we're going to see next time, what she says is not come lay with me or come sleep with me, and therefore to try and kind of trap him into something. No, she says, I want you to cover me. I want you to redeem me. So both Ruth and Boaz are in a very precarious situation. It's something that is highly charged with both the proposal and the possibility of this going wrong. And yet it's against that backdrop that their character both shines out all the more. So I tend to read this not as an act of seduction, but as a very, very strong act of suggestion on the part of Ruth. So what say you, Brian?
All right, so I'm going to go a little bit further than you, Tim, for actually some of the same reasons that you listed out. I do think this is a overt sexual offer.
Okay.
So I'm not going to use the word seduction because I don't think, and I think this is a key point, this is not meant to be misleading. This is not a wily woman trying to, you know, work her way into the confidence of Boaz. I think actually that's the key point. This is an over offer of relationship and sex. But it is done with an eye, a literary eye, to Lot and his daughters. So remember, listeners, going back to chapter one, we brought this out. Ruth is a Moabitess. The Moabites, boy, they are not the best of people if you follow the Old Testament account. Not only are they, right, the foil in Balaam's story that, right, the men of Israel lay with the daughters of Moab, and that leads God to punish them. But go all the way back to the origin of the Moabites, it's Lot, as of Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot, right? His wife dies, they go off into the mountains, and it's just Lot and his daughters. His daughters, each of them, get Lot drunk on separate occasions and take advantage of him to have kids. They are products of incest. And that's meant to be a slap in the face, right, of the Moabites. It's written kind of with an eye of like, oh, these dirty people, why would you want anything to do with them? I think we need to have that story in the back of our mind, though, because what we see in that story is a fear. The daughters go, our line is going to die out. And we are willing to take advantage of someone, even our father, to make sure that that does not happen. Here we see an interesting story. We see a bold offer. We see Naomi rolling the dice. I need to do something bold to try to secure the future of my family. Ruth, go in and seduce. Take this right up to, and I think this is a uncovering of his nakedness, ready to go, but you don't start it. You don't take the choice away from Boaz. You bring it right up to the edge and then ask, what are you going to do? That is the key, to my mind, Tim, break with the story of the Moabites with Lot and his daughters. Ruth is not willing to sit idly by. She's willing to boldly try to go forward to bring about the promises and blessings of Yahweh, but she's not willing to take away Boaz's autonomy and consent. He is still the one that needs to extend those, right? And so I see this kind of beautiful, this beautiful boldness. And listeners, this maybe makes us uncomfortable. Like, boy, this is kind of sexually risque. Are we okay with that? Go back to Genesis with Judah and Tamar. Tamar does this and more. And what is the net result at the end of that story? Judah says she was more righteous than I because I was the one ignoring what God demanded of me. She was willing to be bold to seize the promises of God. I think, Tim, we see that exact same boldness here. And we see basically the ball, no pun intended, placed in Boaz's court saying, what are you going to do now? But I'm not going to do what my forebears, Lot's daughters, did and just grab this and take it by force, take advantage of you. I'm going to put everything on the line, but I want to use, I guess, a popular buzzword in our culture. I want your consent. Is this something that's going to take place? And we'll unpack this more next time as well. How this story continues to unfold also continues to push us further and further away because sex is not something that takes place here this night, even though it's on offer. And I think that's a key point in interpreting this passage. So yeah. I go a little bit further than you are, Tim. I think this is supposed to be a highly charged moment. And I don't have any issue with that. I think this is someone trying to boldly lay claim to the promises that she knows are out there, yet still respecting Boaz as the bringer of those promises, if he so chooses. So I guess that's where I would land on that, Tim.
Yeah. Well, very clearly, Ruth knows and Naomi knows that by going to the threshing floor, whether or not she actively is soliciting it from Boaz, that's what everyone's going to think. Right?
Yeah.
And that's very clear. She's putting her reputation on the line. She's going to the place that has a reputation. There's all of these words that are used. So it's very highly suggestive. And whether or not anything happens, people will assume that it did happen. But I totally agree with you. She is putting herself, in essence, completely in Boaz's hand. And whether or not there's an offer of sex in that moment, or whether it's the proposal of, this is something that could happen later if you marry me, obviously, what you're saying is she put herself completely in his hands in that moment, and Boaz was left to respond. So in any case, we see that Boaz's response is crucial. How is he going to act? And especially in a time, as we've said before, when every man does what is right in his own eyes, no one is going to know, no one is going to see. He has all the power, he has all the leverage, and yet in that moment, even after he is in good spirits, even after he's been celebrating, he still, in that moment, chooses to do what is right in the eyes of God and therefore shows himself to be a righteous man. So Boaz is incredibly faithful in this moment. Ruth, by the way, is also faithful. It's not just that Naomi rolls the dice. Ruth is willing to listen to her. Everything you have said to me, I will do. And she does it. She does it down to a T. So she puts her trust in Naomi. She puts her trust in Boaz. But most importantly, she's putting her hope and her trust in God, that God will come through and he will redeem, using Boaz as his instrument to do that.
Well, well said, Tim. And we will continue the story next time as we see this interaction kind of unfold. Where does the knight go with this offer? No matter how far we think it's going, it is clearly, as you said, Tim, going to have this kind of impression of an illicit offer on store. So let's see where this goes next time. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us here today. We hope this series through Ruth has been as fun for you as it has been for us. If you have any questions, feel free to email them to us at inwiththeoldpodcast@outlook.com. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or like and comment this video and share your questions with us. We hope you have a wonderful week and we look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, stay cool and stay old.